What's up, everyone? This is Anthony Pompliano. Most of you know me as Pomp. You're listening to the Pomp Podcast, simply the best podcast out there. Now let's kick this thing off.
Anthony Zhang is the founder and CEO of Vinovest, an alternative asset platform focused on fine wine. In this conversation, we discuss alternative assets, portfolio construction, wine as an asset class, how Vinovest works, and the investment case for wine. I really enjoyed this conversation with Anthony, and I hope you do as well. Before we get into this episode, I want to quickly talk about our sponsors. First up is Bubble. Do you have a business idea you've been dreaming about but don't know how to actually start building it? Use Bubble's drag and drop tool to develop custom, interactive, multi-user web apps in hours. Go to bubble.io to build, launch, and scale real ideas and products without engineers or code. Bubble is the go-to no-code platform for over 1 million builders and has recently closed a $100 million funding round to continue supporting startups like yours. From MVP to IPO, go to bubble.io/pomp and the first 500 listeners will get their first month free on any of Bubble's paid plans. Literally, Bubble is the best place to go if you're trying to build an MVP and continue to scale it. Go to bubble.io/pomp today, and the first 500 people will get their first month free on any of the paid plans. Next up is OKCoin, one of the most popular licensed exchanges. OKCoin is the first to bring new cryptos to market, offering some of the lowest fees in the industry. An easy-to-use app and earn feature. You got to check out their brand new, beautifully designed app. As of today, they also became the first U.S. exchange to list a variety of assets. It's easier than ever to sign up. You can buy and trade crypto in just 2 minutes on OKCoin with credit or debit cards, and you can just link your bank account to the best new crypto assets as well. Again, OKCoin, one of the most popular licensed exchanges. Go check them out today at OKCoin.com/pomp. Again, OKCoin.com/pomp. All right, let's get this episode with Anthony. I hope you guys enjoy this one.
Anthony Pompliano runs Pomp Investments. All views of him and the guests on his podcast are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Pomp Investments. You should not treat any opinion expressed by Pomp or his guests as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of his personal opinion. This podcast is for informational purposes only.
All right, guys. Bang, bang. Got my friend Anthony here with me. Thank you so much for doing this.
Absolutely, Pom. It's a pleasure. Good to reconnect again.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously, and Anthony means that your parents are just as smart as my parents. That's a great name that they gave you there.
Exactly. That's kind of the first way where we bonded over an excellent name, right?
For sure. So you're working on a investing platform that focuses specifically on wine. And I'm fascinated by this. We have somebody who I think we both deeply respect in common, a gentleman named Dustin Wilson, who is a master sommelier and was the wine director at 11 Madison Park, has worked at a number of other great restaurants, was featured in the documentary Somm, which I enjoyed watching, along with what I think are hundreds of thousands or millions of other people. But let's start with just wine before we kind of get to Dustin, what I'll call it the sommelier part of the industry. Why is wine interesting as an investment class at all? Like, why do people buy it and put it in their portfolio?
Yeah, I think that's kind of the best question to start with. It's like, why the hell do people even want to invest in wine? And I think it goes back to just simple supply and demand, right? A winery, they can only produce, say, X amount of wine each year. And as the years go on, as the wine ages, gets better, it becomes more desirable. People want to drink aged wine. But because of natural consumption, there's just less and less of it as the years go on. So you have this fixed supply, even diminishing supply asset, coupled with growing demand. And that's how you get really long-term and steady price appreciation in this asset class.
Got it. And then my understanding is that wine has actually outperformed stocks over like really long periods of time. Is that accurate? Or how do you kind of think about the historical performance of this asset class versus other types of assets?
Yeah, that was really my light bulb moment. I'm like, wow, I really got to look into this. Is saw a headline saying that wine has outperformed global equities, not just past 5 years, 10 years, it's been for decades, 2-3 decades. And I think with that, I was like, why are more people not even knowing that A, you can invest in wine, and B, how do I get in on this? So that was kind of my user journey. And it was really tough realizing that, oh, you actually need to be pretty wealthy to even get access to the right wines, even know which ones to buy. And then if you don't have a wine cellar, you got to figure out all the logistics there, right? And I was like, there's got to be an easier way. I'm spending hours and hours and I haven't even bought a single bottle of wine yet. And that's really how I started Vinovest.
Yeah. So what's so fascinating about it is when I heard that you were doing this, I was like, why can't you just like go to the store and buy a bottle? And is it just like, oh, whoever holds their bottle for the longest before they open it, it ends up being valuable, right? Kind of you think of time as a proxy for value, but it's actually not just time, obviously, right? There's all kinds of different variables that go into this. And so how much of this do you think is kind of narrative driven? Like there's a special type of winemaker from a special region that was done in a special year or special kind of vintage. And then you put all those characteristics together and that ultimately leads to value? Or is it something more simplistic that you can kind of point to one thing that ends up driving the value of one bottle of wine over a different one?
So I think there are going to be X factors, like you mentioned. I'm like, oh, very, very special year, right? Like 2020, no one's going to forget this year, and wine produced in 2020 is going to have that sort of X factor when people down the line are looking to drink it, you know, maybe at the 10-year mark or 20-year mark, you're going to see increases in value because that is when people deem that the wine is ready to drink. So things like that, or things like, say, LeBron posting a photo of a bottle of wine that he's enjoying, the price spikes immediately on the secondary market. So you have catalysts that are a little bit hard to predict like that. And then you also have the basic fundamentals that drive, you know, your annualized supply, predicted consumption demand, as well as volatility over a long period of time, looking at previous vintages as comps.
Got it. And so when people are allocating to this, is there like a rule of thumb, or as you've talked to more and more people who have wine allocations, is this a 1% type thing? Are there people who have 50% of their net worth in wine? Like where kind of do people fall in terms of portfolio construction and how wine fits into it?
Yeah, I think it's really up to the individual, but looking at what else you're owning, right? If you're owning other very high volatility, high return assets, you want to be able to counter that volatility in your portfolio with something that is a little bit more stable. And wine as an asset class has proven to have about a third of the volatility of global equities. And it's something that has a maturity date, right? You know, if you want to hold wine as an asset for 10 years versus 5 years, Vinovest would be able to pick out completely different sets of wines that can help you achieve that goal. So in a way, it's kind of like a bond, but a little bit sexier.
Got it. And then I got to ask, traditionally, when people go and they buy wine as an investment, some portion of it has to get drunk at, you know, rather than held, right? Like at some point, somebody's like, oh man, you know, yeah, I know I bought this and I wanted it as an investment, but like, you know what? It just looks like a great bottle of wine. I got to try it. Like, is there any stats or kind of anecdotal evidence you have that that happens?
Yeah, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword, right? Because like you can drink it and someone's going to drink it at the end of the day to be able to realize that return. And with Vinovest, since we're not like fractionalizing or securitizing the asset, you actually can do that. So say, you know, you're celebrating an anniversary or, you know, anything special, we can actually ship that wine to you. You can enjoy it. Of course, you're literally drinking your profits away, but, you know, that's kind of part of the fun of it.
Yeah, it's so fascinating. All right, tell me about Vinovest and kind of what you all are building, because I think that you've highlighted there's this really big educational gap and also just time and energy that's needed to become somewhat of a connoisseur of wine, both from just like what is good wine, what is not good wine, but then also there's the layer of the investment strategy on top of it. So what are you all building and how does it work?
Yeah, so not everybody is a wine connoisseur like you are. So we got to be able to start with someone who knows absolutely nothing about wine or wine investing. So that's why we built our model to be a managed portfolio. You just type in things like, hey, this is how long I want to hold this investment. This is my risk appetite. And then also, this is how much I want to invest. And based on those factors, the Vinovest algorithm will actually be able to source, store, and then give you price alerts and rebalance your portfolio as time goes on. So we're really acting as that active robo-advisor to really be an on-ramp for a beginner before they feel confident enough making their own decisions in the future.
Got it. And so when you start thinking through from a user experience standpoint, I basically come onto the platform, I create an account, and then what does the average user do? Is it kind of educational first? Do I just go and I start to try to select my own wine? Or I'm actually just putting in inputs or criteria of what I'm looking for, and then I'm really relying on the recommendation algorithm to tell me what I should buy or what I shouldn't buy?
I would say about 95% of our customers come in with that latter perspective. They're like, hey, this sounds interesting. I would like to get a little bit of exposure, dip my toe in. Let's let Vinovest pick for me first. And then throughout the course of the next months or years, you know, we're feeding you content where our research team is creating analysis and helping you learn more about, oh, why is this wine region doing better than the other? Or why is this year particularly interesting from an investment standpoint? And people start to be able to get equipped with that knowledge and feel more confident on making their own investment and trading decisions. So now we're seeing more and more of our earlier and more seasoned users shift to becoming wanting some more active trading.
Yeah. And so what's happening in the background? Obviously, I know Dustin is involved somewhat, but explain kind of what's happening here when I'm putting in that criteria and you're telling me, okay, this is a wine that fits that that thing that you're looking for. Is Dustin, love him to death, but is he the one picking the wine? Is there software here? Are there 10 or 12 people? Like, how does it work on the back end?
Yeah. So thankfully, most of it is automated. So just like stocks, there are your equivalent of like blue chip, super steady, Apples and Amazons of the world types of wines. And these are going to be wines that are, you know, from Bordeaux, from Burgundy, really well-established regions. And those are kind of the backbone or kind of the safe assets to invest in. But if you wanted to go super aggressive, there's also your equivalent of emerging market wines or stocks of newer winemakers, newer wine regions that have a little bit more speculation built into it. So based on your preferences, we'll get you the types of wines that fit those preferences. We're buying actual full bottles and cases of wine that you own, and then we'll store them in our network of professional wine storage facilities where they are first checked and inspected for condition, authenticity, provenance, and then also stored and fully insured in these vaults. And in that, it's a fully digital experience for the user. You don't need to worry about your wine, where to store it, anything like that. And then on our dashboard, we give you live pricing, knowing your mark to market, as well as content, as well as access to our portfolio advisory team to be able to review your portfolios on scheduled times too.
Got it. And so when you think through kind of the security and storage, how much risk is there for an individual to do that themselves, right? Everyone's seen the crazy photos. The one that immediately jumps to mind is one of the Koch brothers has got this like absolute monstrosity in their basement, right?
Oh my God. Yeah. I've seen that photo.
Right. I mean, it's insane how crazy it is. So I see that. And then I obviously see like the big warehouses that are at a winery or something. The average person's like, hey, I got a couple of a rack on the wall, right? It is kind of all I have. Is it essential from an investment standpoint to have that storage and security, or can people do this at home as well?
So that's really the biggest risk in my mind of this asset class is sourcing the right asset and then also protecting it, because it's not like something like gold or stocks where it doesn't really matter who you got it from. Wine is something that actually can be damaged and can turn to vinegar very, very easily if you don't store it correctly. So that's really the biggest thing that I believe Vinovest is de-risking, is completely handling that storage component and then also giving you a level of security with our insurance policy to, in case there's anything that happens to that bottle, you still are able to recoup the value of your investment, which in an industry where there's really no regulation around that, we want to be able to hold ourselves to a little bit of a higher standard and almost self-regulate.
Yeah. And then obviously, there's plenty of people who have become familiar with the wine industry. They've watched something like maybe, is it Corked or Uncorked, I think is the name of the documentary, where basically there's a guy who's creating fake high-end wine. And for those that haven't watched it, they should go watch the documentary and kind of see how it's happening. But how do you ensure that the wine that is purchased at this high end of the market is actually authentic and kind of what somebody thinks they're buying?
Yeah. I mean, that is, I think, a huge problem in any sort of luxury or secondary market, right? Whenever there is demand that's more than supply, people are going to make fakes, fake handbags, watches, you know, even scanning fake crypto, right? It's everywhere. And we only buy either direct from the source or from a professional sort of like wine merchant that we've already vetted and sourced. And the good thing is that we can track also where that wine has been and lived before it's gotten to us. You know, if it's at one of the warehouses, we want to know from the warehouse who had that wine before. You know, and obviously, hopefully it's the winery, so we can trace it all the way back to the right source. And if we're unable to, we won't buy the wine at all.
Got it. And then in terms of the wine, it feels like the length of time is really important. Is there any premium that is put for wine that's been held by a certain person? So we talked about one of the Koch brothers earlier. Is there a premium that actually gets assigned because somebody knows that this individual actually bought wine, held this at some point, or it was in their wine cellar? I could imagine, you know, Thomas Jefferson, I actually think, is one of them where there's like a wine bottle out there from Thomas Jefferson. But okay, that makes sense. But like more modern folks, is there any sort of premium assigned for that?
There is a premium assigned to the source of the cellar, who that cellar is, as well as where it is. So for example, if you're buying, you know, a rare champagne, it would be most ideal if you're buying wine that's already housed in champagne, has yet to leave the winery, and you're buying it direct from the winery. Versus the same champagne bottle, maybe it's in some collector in California's cellar, that champagne bottle is already moved halfway around the world. There's a little bit of risk involved in that because we don't know how the shipping was. Was it temperature controlled? Did it lay on a cargo dock for 30 days before even entering the US? So all of those are factors that we take into account when we're pricing. And that's why we have a distributed network of storage facilities. All of them are located next to the major wine growing regions, you know, whether it be we have one in Napa, we have one in Bordeaux in France. And we keep the wine as close to the source as possible because of that sort of cellar premium that you're mentioning.
Yeah, it's fascinating. What's been the most difficult part about building this so far in terms of the platform and the technology side?
I think for us, it's really taking an industry that is so huge and old and slow moving and being able to build the sort of rails to turn offline to online, right? We a funny story is one of our major warehouses, you know, they're storing billions of dollars worth of wine and they didn't have a functioning website. And I only found them through industry connections. And here you have like, you know, a huge, most, you know, really valuable place. And how can we get people like that to be able to go online with us and be able to be with our workflows? So that's been a pretty interesting challenge for us to be able to go through. And, you know, we're still a long ways to where we want to be, but we're starting to make some strides.
Yeah. And then how much of this is, there's just some like core wines that everyone knows will kind of appreciate over time. So I think of it as like the S&P 500, right? If you invest dollar cost average over a long period of time, you're pretty much good to go. Is that true in wine as well, as where there's just like some kind of, you know, some blue chips, if you will, that everyone tends to think they might not be the best performer, but you're not going to lose money over long periods of time?
Yeah, there's absolutely your equivalent of blue chips. So these would be kind of the first growth Bordeaux. So like Chateau Lafite, Chateau Mouton in the United States, wines like Screaming Eagle or Harlan or Opus One. These are ones that have been producing incredible wines for decades. You can look at the previous performance and price history and see a very steady and positive correlation with age. And those are ones that are pretty hard to go down in value unless you really mess up the storage component. So I think that's one of the more attractive things about wine is it has very low drawdowns and it's hard for you to lose your principal.
Absolutely. And one of the things when I was getting ready for this conversation, I was actually pretty impressed with is you all have created a index yourself, this like VinoVest 100, I think it is. And so explain a little bit about what this is, how it's calculated, and then why you all created your own index to try to track the kind of the high-end wine market.
Yeah. So the VinoVest 100 is an index that tracks pricing for what we believe as the top 100 wines in the world. And we are tracking not only just the most recent vintage, but the prices of the last 15 years to be able to give you a broader sense of what that winery is capable of. And the main reason is because there is very little familiarity of the wine asset class. And I think the easiest way to educate people is to build bridges with things that they already understand. So people already know, oh, S&P 500, most valuable 500 companies in the world. Vinovest 100, they can kind of make that sort of jump in their minds and be like, oh, this is kind of the equivalent of the S&P. And for us, establishing that sort of transparency and trust and being able to have that for the customer as something that they're familiar with, I think is really important for really paving the way in this industry.
Yeah. And I guess as part of this, you can really start to break down not only the different regions, not only different time periods, but you can also start to break down the wine market in general, the higher end versus the lower end, and start to track financial performance. What's blown me away is when you look through this, I think that you guys are basically tracking 12 different fine wine markets around the world. And some of these are actually pretty insane from a return perspective. So in Q2, there was two separate regions that returned over 8%, from what I understand. And then some of these reports are actually even highlighting the fact that there was a winning bid in Hong Kong dollars of $49 million a couple of bottles of wine, like less than 50 bottles of wine for $49 million. Like, I mean, this is crazy stuff that's going on here.
Yeah, I mean, with those auctions, I think it's very similar to art or kind of these really rare collectibles where there's only a few in the world, right? And we're seeing kind of the wealthy spending more and more on things, especially with things that are irreplaceable, right? Like, for example, a wine from 1945, you know, World War II, there's probably less than 10 in the world. And when you're rich and have that much money, like, what do you want to do? You want to get what other people can't have. And with the performance of wine, I think, especially with these last few years of the pandemic, it's really shown us that through good times and bad times, people are still going to be drinking and really being able to enjoy life. And we've seen that kind of pattern really kind of bleed into the wine market a little bit too with the consumption spending.
For sure. And then I can't let you go without asking you, I saw that you all started to accept Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies as well. So what kind of went into that decision?
Yeah, I mean, with my co-founder and I working at Blockfolio for the last few years before Vinovest, we're big believers in being able to democratize access to not only just this asset class, but the way that people get into this asset class. So, you know, whether it be fiat, whether it be mailing a check, whether it be using Doge or Bitcoin or Bitcoin Cash, like, I don't care. We want to just make it easy for people. So that's why we decided to start accepting crypto payments.
Yeah, it makes sense. Have people been paying with it or not yet?
Yeah, we've done a few million dollars worth of turnover in the last few months just from our crypto payment gateway alone. So we've definitely seen some great overlap and an interest in people who want to just diversify a little bit, because if you think about it, it's kind of the perfect match, right? Crypto is like probably the highest volatility, most exciting asset class that people can invest in. And then you have wine, which is just really, really steady, almost boring in terms of its return potential. But it's also kind of cool because no one else is doing it.
Yeah. What is for you the kind of the most personally satisfying part of this whole thing as you've been building it?
So I think for me, I've always just had this interest in wine. I grew up in Beijing, in Hong Kong, at a time where red wine, especially from France, was getting huge. So I'd always remember growing up, you know, just seeing these crazy bottles being opened. And when you go into a friend's house, how much you like that friend is kind of determining how much you're spending on the bottle. And just from a cultural significance level, it's been interesting to me to learn more about that. And then layering on the kind of financialization or building here with Vinovest, it's really married two of my great passions and a lot of fun to learn about and work on.
Yeah. And then in terms of what the plan is moving forward, obviously you want to continue to build out the platform. Which form does that take? What do you think kind of Vinovest grows into, or what are you guys working on?
So for us, it's really about making it easier than ever for different types of people to come in. So today we have a robo-advisor product. It's really easy as an on-ramp for someone who knows nothing about wine investing to get in and just be able to easily deploy some capital. But we eventually want to have people be able to make their own trading decisions, have people be able to not only bet on lines that are already out, but say if they love this producer and they want to be able to bet on future harvest, be able to create the liquidity and the mechanism to be able to bet and create derivatives markets for wine, I think is the next step for us. And really financializing, globalizing, and making it easy and easier for both winery partners as well as customers to be able to capture some of the value that's going on here.
Got it. And then in terms of actually company building, how many employees do you have, capital raise? What metrics can you share with us in terms of how it's going so far?
Yeah, so we founded in late 2019, so we're almost 2 years old today. Raised seed and series A round, totaling around $16 million. And now we've got thousands of investors around the world. We're just about to hit our 30th employee, so it's been really exciting to be able to hire people from all around the world too. And you know, we want to be able to manage billions of dollars in assets one day.
Yeah, it feels like businesses that got started at the end of 2019 or kind of in 2019 and then ran smack, you know, into the middle of the pandemic. One of two things happened: either they absolutely got torpedoed and it was over before it ever got started, or businesses like yourself were able to really kind of benefit from the tailwind of the kind of, you know, digital economy and investing and the macro economy. And so is that kind of how you see it? There has been that tailwind of more and more people invested in or interested in investing?
Absolutely. So we launched our product the last week of February of 2020. So if you can remember what happened there, a massive market crash. And me and my co-founder looked at each other like, oh my God, is this the worst time ever to launch an investing app? And then we looked at the price of wine and it had a negative correlation. So wine prices were actually up. We're like, oh my God, what's going on here? And it's really, I think, just served as a tailwind, especially with, you know, the whole Robinhood and Wall Street Bets movement. It's really made it clear that anybody and everybody can be and will be an investor. And that sort of curiosity extends outside of just the stock market. People are going into all sorts of crazy things. And wine is something that I think has been a little bit of like a mystery, right? Like it's always like someone's rich uncle that, you know, maybe has done this and has made a lot of money, but we want to make it for everybody. And I think when you're looking at macro tailwinds with higher and higher inflation, kind of the turn to want to go to hard assets as hedges against that inflation, we've got some great tailwinds that can help our business and help the performance of the asset class as well.
Absolutely. I'm a big fan. I think it's kind of a no-brainer. And then the fact that you can convince Dustin, I like to give Dustin a hard time, but he's by far the person who knows the absolute most about wine that I know. So if he's in, I'm in. Where can we send people to find you or Vinovest on the internet? Where are the best places to send folks?
So my email is anthony@vinovest.co. Definitely welcome any sort of questions, direct communication there. And you can find us at vinovest.co. Encourage you to check it out and see if this is right for you.
Awesome. Before I let you go, ask everyone the same three questions and then you'll get to ask me one. The first question is, what is the most important book that you've ever read?
So most important book, it's got to be Zero to One. So I took the Thiel Fellowship a few years ago, dropped out, and that was the first thing that they sent me in the mail. And really helped me build confidence in the business that I was building at the time and being able to kind of validate that as a reason to be able to believe in myself as an entrepreneur.
Second question is sleep schedule. Our friends over at 8 Sleep have this thermoregulated bed that I've been sleeping on. It's like super cold. And just when I don't know what the science is, I'm not a scientist. When I sleep on the cold bed, I'm knocked out, much better sleep. What's your sleep schedule like these days?
So for me, I'm the same way, except for my fiance is completely the opposite. So we've got this sort of halfway cold, halfway hot, and maybe we switch in the middle of the night situation. Still trying to figure it out, but I'm lucky that I'm out like a rock every single night because
I love it. That's the best way to be. It's just bam, cold, I'm gone. See ya.
Yes. See you tomorrow.
Third question, a little bit more fun. Aliens, are you a believer or a non-believer?
Absolutely. We're definitely not the smartest people out here. There's people that are way smarter. I don't even know if we can categorize them as people, but looking at what we know at the human race, there's got to be something better out there. So that's what I'm believing.
Yeah, it feels like if we are it, then that's kind of a depressing view of the world and of the galaxy, right? Like, there, of course, there's got to be things out there. Come on. Like, that's the only exciting way to do it.
Exactly. I mean, I like my dog more than most humans. So that's just something. There's got to be aliens out there.
What one question do you have for me to finish up?
I would say, what's your favorite food and wine pairing? What is your sort of like ideal last meal pair with some nice wine that Dustin picked? What's it going to be?
So I'm going to cheat here because if I ever want anything that is high end, then I just literally text Dustin and say, hey, what should I do? So I'm definitely cheating on that front. But there is a bottle of wine that I will take credit for. I found at a liquor store in New York City, and I showed it to Dustin, and he's like, I've never seen that before. And so I felt like, oh, I like, you know, I found something I've never seen before. But as you would expect, it's not because it's overly nice, because it's so ridiculous. And it's it is a brand called Cooper and Thief. And what they basically do is they put the wine in, I want to say, if I remember correctly, bourbon barrels. And so when you drink the wine, it has like a kind of like a smoky, almost like bourbon-y type taste to it. I'm sitting here pretending like I know anything about how to describe the various tastes, whatever. But that one, every time I see it, I always say, look, I got to get it. The problem is it has a very, very high alcohol content. And so like, one, maybe two glasses and it's game over. Like you'll just be hammered. So you got to be careful with Cooper and Thief.
All right. I love it. I mean, I don't see much of a problem. Sounds pretty efficient to me if you're out after a couple of glasses.
Exactly. All right. So we're going to send people anthony@vinovest.co. They want to reach out to you, or vinovest.co is the website. People can go check it out there. Any last words for folks, or any final pitch as to why they should go and use the platform?
Yeah, I think if you like wine, if you don't like wine, look at the numbers, right? It's low volatility, low correlation to the market. Even if you don't drink at all or don't care about right or what, it's something that I think you should consider if you have passing around.
I think that you may be on to something there, my friend. Thank you so much for doing this. We'll definitely do it again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Take care.